Hey guys, this podcast is being brought to you today with the help of Blue Mic Microphones and Skull Candy Headphones. Check them out at bluemic.com and skullcandy.com. So this week, Nick and I sat down to discuss all pertinent details of the week, including Canzine, which is a zine fair that I went to in Toronto. And it looks like zines are taking off because just read this article in the New York Times about how there's a zine resurgence. We also talk about all the Twitter bullshit of the week, including the Metallica Lou Reed album, Oprah Winfrey, and Nick Flanagan's Twitter account, and Dan Aykroyd. It'll all make sense if you can get to the end of the podcast. So the official Danko Jones podcast starts now. Another podcast has started. My name's Danko Jones. It's the official Danko Jones podcast. With me, as always, from now on, is Mr. Nick Flanagan, and that's the tag that I'm going to be using to introduce you, I think, from now on.
Hey.
And that's your tag.
That's my tag. Yeah. I have a tag now. Put it on t-shirts.
You were here again. This is our fourth podcast together, and I believe it's the 11th podcast under the iTunes
banner.
Yeah. So last week we had my friend Brendan Canning from Broken Social Scene sitting in, our first guest. Oh, yes, that's right. He drove you home.
He drove me sort of home.
Sort of home.
Near my house.
And I thought it was cool. I thought we were able to dig a little bit of dirt, a little more insight as to both our bands and our relationship. I don't get to see Brendan all too often except on holidays and on the road. I've bumped into the Broken Social Scene in the weirdest places at the weirdest times, but it's always when we're on the road. I was walking on the street in Amsterdam one year and coming out of dinner with a couple of friends, and there he was just walking with a couple of Broken Social Scene guys, and then we ended up hanging out that night. And the same thing happened in Sweden and again in Holland at the Lowlands Festival. So it's been a few times where we've bumped into each other. But the one thing I've
seen him in New York a couple of times.
Yeah.
When I've been down there doing the jokes.
I guess as this podcast goes on, what will be revealed, I hate to use the word shy because it's such a soft word, but I am shy that gets misconstrued as with an attitude or an arrogant a lot of the time. I kind of like to keep to myself, and it has nothing to do with the fact that I don't like you or anything, but I'm only good with one-on-one. As you and I have been doing the podcast and as you and I have been friends, I'm more of a one-on-one guy. And when it comes to meeting new people, it takes a long time for me to warm up to you. So like we said in the podcast last week, I'm leading up to a story that I had that I forgot to relay to Brendan, but, living with Brendan forces you to be part of this broken social scene or this social scene that Brendan's a very popular, well-liked guy. And so I remember this time we had a party, we threw a party at the house. Now, this is a big thing for me, and for Brendan, it's just regular fare. So, wow, there's a party, and there's going to be a lot of people in my personal space.
Up in your shiz.
Yes. And what ended up happening was, it was great. You know, it was a good time was had by all, and I was nervous the whole time, the whole night, just watching people and where they're going. But I remember this. I don't know what it was. Maybe it was 2 or 3 in the morning. The cops came. It was one of those crazy parties. The cops came, and we had to turn the music down, and there was people filtering out onto the street.
Did anyone freebase?
No, there is no freebasing. Or I mean, was not, it a none party? That I know of.
That's no party if no, there's no
it's kind of not a party.
Turned into rock.
Yeah. Well, what I was leading up to was around 2 or 3 in the morning, I remember this very vividly. Something in my head just said, I'm done. And instead of walking up into my room and going to bed or saying goodnight and just letting the party go on because I had two other roommates, I picked up a garbage bag and started cleaning up. And I just didn't realize that that would – actually, I kind of did. I knew that that would kind of – I just basically said, I'm done and you're done too. So
you just basically said, this is done.
Get the fuck out of my house in not so many words. And I just started cleaning up around everybody and putting dishes into the sink, cleaning up everybody's garbage with this huge garbage bag. And eventually people got my drift, and it filtered out. It took about half an hour, but eventually the party was officially over. And that wasn't the most polite way of throwing a party and ending a party. And that was something I failed to relay to Brendan when he was here last week.
You can end parties, though, in a rude fashion. The thing is,
I don't know. I don't throw them.
Well, I'm not saying, you know, yeah, exactly. That's a party rule, I believe, is after 2 a.m., you can stop the party at your discretion, and you can do it in the rudest manner.
It was raging.
Of your choice.
It was a raging party.
You know what? The place probably would have been burnt to the ground had you not pulled that garbage bag out and started putting styrofoam cups inside said bag.
You and I doing this podcast now, we have always been friendly, and we exchange an email every now and then, but doing this podcast has forced both of us to be in each other's lives a little more.
Yeah, that's right.
To the point where we were actually texting each other on the weekend, and I don't ever text you on the weekend.
No, that's a rule. Hard
and
rule
we actually
yours.
Ended up talking on the weekend on the phone, which I never do to you. We never do to each other.
We're doing it.
And part of the reason was I went to this. Now, I never, like I said, I hardly ever venture out of my house when I'm home because all I do is venture out and tour and tour and tour. So I like to just, like, keep it really low key. But there was this one tweet that really kind of got my interest piqued, and I really wanted to check it out. And it was Liz Wirth, who wrote the book "Treat Me Like Dirt," which is a great book on the Toronto punk scene, an oral history of the Toronto punk scene from its earliest beginnings. Mm-hmm. She tweeted that she was going to be at this thing called Canzine, and it was this fair where people will be selling homemade comic books, homemade like zines and poetry, books, novelists, whatever.
It's probably been going on for years.
And
right?
It's been going on for years by, I think, Broken Pencil, this zine itself, puts it on.
There's a few different zine fairs in Toronto. I don't want to brag, but we as a city here in Hogtown, T.O., T.O., Brick, what's another word for this place? El Toro,
I believe is the
name. Someone came up for it.
I don't know.
Ronto.
Anyways,
we've got a strong zine culture.
Yeah, and that's really great. I don't get to check these things out, mainly because I'm on the road. And like I said, when I'm home, I just like to keep it really
low-key.
And I went to this thing. And I went to this thing partly because I have a genuine interest in, you know, comic books and zines, and I love that kind of thing. And I think people doing it homemade and DIY style is really cool. Mm-hmm. But I was also interested to know that here I haven't been to one in a long time. And in the digital age now, with blogs and websites and what have you,
Tumblr,
what would be showcased at a zine fair in 2011? And let me tell you something. It's like I walked into 1995.
Yeah.
It's still the same homemade zines. It was pretty cool. I really thought it was a great, great bunch of people doing like homemade comics. And I got to meet Liz, never met her before. She had her stand selling her book and her books, other books of poetry and what have you, short stories. I thought it was really cool. But also, the reason why I also went, beyond the fact that my curiosity was piqued, I like that kind of stuff, is I thought it would be really cool to have something to talk about when I meet up with Nick, because And it was forcing me to leave the house. And this whole podcast has forced me to be more social when I'm at home.
It's breaking you out of your shell.
It's breaking me out of my shell. And I like it. Kind of like the Katy Perry song.
Is that the song? It's called It's Breaking Me Out of My Shell and I Like It?
Yeah, that would be my song.
Your version of it.
And I gave Nick a call, who was at an acting gig. You were actually being filmed. What the hell was going on?
I was being filmed. And just to also start this off, it started with a text from you that said, gotta get out of the house. Going to Kansas.
Yeah. Seriously, got it.
And I was like, is this... Did he mean to send this to me? Is this supposed to go to someone else?
No, I sent the text to you and JC, to be honest.
Yeah. Just in case we were in the neighborhood.
JC was watching football. He was watching NFL because apparently there's no NBA season this year, which he is addicted to.
Yeah. And so I think he's such a better sport than football.
Yeah, I think so too. But I think he's going to slowly get addicted to football now.
Football is kind of awesome because it really is so TV oriented. When you watch American football on TV, it makes complete sense. But there's something also that I just find like not appropriate to my lifestyle about it.
My whole thing is like I'm not a sports guy too much, but I am when I play video games.
Yeah.
And that's what I like. Basically, my text to you that afternoon was either I go to this Kansian thing and do something different for a change, or stay at home and play Fight Night again for the millionth time.
Right, alone.
As Marvin Hagler.
Let's just make sure, alone, right?
Yes.
I was acting 2 days of humorous acting, and it was at times uncomfortable because I was wearing a lot of makeup for a few scenes, and football. The football stuff was the most uncomfortable I've been in an acting performance.
Did you get tackled?
That I can think of. I didn't even get tackled. I just got like pushed out of the way in a scene, and that was traumatizing. Just deeply traumatizing. Because it was also at about 8 in the morning.
Well, I mean, we can...
On a Saturday.
We can talk about this till the cows come home, but at the end of the day, if you're not going to disclose the participants or the actual project, I think it's boring for a lot of people.
It was actually a very conceptual idea for a pilot involving people
it's a good start.
They've got a guy with a deformity. It's a comedy about a deformed guy.
Okay.
So.
All right.
I was also in it, and I had some makeup on. Am I killing this?
No. We'll figure it out.
No, I meant in the "this is awesome" sense. Am I killing this or what?
It's been fucking going crazy for me the last couple of days. Now, I seem to step into it every so often on Twitter, and that's why I actually have come to enjoy Twitter. When the guys who, you know, run our website and, you know, management people type people came up to me and they said, you know, it would be cool if you maybe every now and then do a tweet and say hello. I was very, very apprehensive because I thought Twitter was all about, you know, 15-year-old girls tweeting about Ashton Kutcher and Justin Bieber. And then I realized that Jamie Jasta tweets. And so once I found that out, I said, oh, okay. So Jamie was actually, and I've told Jamie this, he was the real reason why I became very active on Twitter. And since then, it's been great. I've actually hooked up with friends and met people that I respect and admire through Twitter, and also been able to be in touch with so many people who really dig what we do. And I tweeted... What the fuck was that?
Sounds like there's a boat somewhere.
Oh, motherfuck. So... I had to just stop tape, and I found out that fucking noise was Nick. His phone was farting.
Sorry about that. Yeah, I turned off the ring, apparently, but not the...
A few months ago, Saturday Night Live booked Chris Brown as a musical guest with Russell Brand as the host. And I tweeted, "Dear Saturday Night Live," something to the effect of, "Dear Saturday Night Live, why don't you book us? You know, we don't hit women, blah, blah, blah," because Chris Brown was the boyfriend of Rihanna and he beat her up. And there's a whole to-do about that. Most people know the story. I'm not going to get into the backstory. What ended up happening was the Chris Brown army, the right. all the fans.
The ladies.
Rained on our Twitter page for a whole night. It was 2.5 hours of nonstop hate tweets.
Plus follows, though, right?
I don't think they were following us. Not all of them. And I didn't answer them back. What I did is I just kept retweeting them and making fun of their bad spelling and bad grammar. And that got a lot of people interested. And there was a whole to-do. A couple of stories were written, et cetera, et cetera. So what I'm saying is I end up stepping into it without even knowing. I did an innocent tweet, and this is what happened. So a couple of days ago, I was listening to the new Metallica record, Lulu, that they did. It's not officially a new Metallica record. It's a Metallica and a Lou Reed collaboration project. They did a record called Lulu. And I was able to listen to it. And as I was listening to it, I was tweeting about it. This is something people do on Twitter. So my first tweet was, listening to the Metallica Lou Reed album Lulu right now. And I waited and I listened and I listened, and I don't know how many minutes later, but eventually I started tweeting stuff like, the Metallica Lou Reed album is the Waterworld of rock and roll, just the worst movies I could think of, because I really thought it was, when you watch Some Kind of Monster, there's a scene with Lars Ulrich's father, and he's listening to something that they are working on, and it's a pretty funny scene, because he basically puts Lars in his place.
Some Kind of Monster has a few scenes where there's large evidence of Metallica making bad decisions, right?
Yes. Yeah. And when you get to the level of Metallica, you run the danger of surrounding yourself with yes men. Mm-hmm. So there really isn't anybody that can buffer your decisions. And thank God there was Lars's father who said this to him. So my critique would be to they should have deleted this Lou Reed collaboration, or just kept it on their iPods and listened to it and just between themselves go, "Wow, we jammed with Lou Reed one day."
Or gone uncredited.
Right. But they put it out, and it's about to come out, and I was able to listen to it, and I was joking around. It was a fucking joke.
You're exaggerating your distaste.
Yeah, I just thought of the worst movies I'd seen in a long time, and Ishtar, I didn't even get to see. I just knew it was a bomb in the box office when it was released, and it's never been released on DVD, so I've never been able to see it. Since I was a kid, I always wanted to see that because it was just such a flop. So I said, the Metallica Lou Reed album is the Ishtar of rock and roll. Then the Waterworld of rock and roll, because I think that movie's horrible. Then the Battlefield Earth, because I think that movie's horrible.
That movie's amazingly horrible.
Amazing, yeah. It's actually quite interesting.
It's wild.
It is wild. And it's all about Dianetics, which is
crazy. About Dianetics, it's got that crazy part where, like, John Travolta bumps his head in a bar scene with Forest Whitaker, and he goes, "Ugh, this ceiling's too low. Why didn't you get some man animals to fix it?"
It's just so crazy with Forest Whitaker as his sidekick.
Whitaker, "Oh, yeah. What? That's his acting. He's basically actually doing the closest performance he's given to his Fast Times performance in Battlefield Earth. He's doing like that guy 20 years later as an alien. Think about it. It's weird.
So what ended up happening was I was listening to it on my... I'm going to paint you the scene as to what happened. I was listening to it on my headphones, and there was a couple other people who were in the room, but they weren't listening to it. And I was just laughing out loud, and they were watching a movie. And so after I finished listening to it, I was like, you guys got to hear this. This is really, really something. And as a joke, more to crack them up because they were in the room, I took all my Metallica records, spread them out on the floor, and took a photo. And I said what I was going to tweet, and I waited the next day. And my tweet was, good morning. Heard the Metallica Lou Reed album last night. Metallica collection now for sale.
Right.
Tweet your price. And I swear to God, I just did that to crack them up, to crack the people who follow us up for the morning, just give them a laugh in the morning. And that's it. And in the afternoon, maybe 8 hours later, unbeknownst to myself, Blabbermouth, someone attached to Blabbermouth had picked up the tweet, posted the tweet on their site, and it went bonkers for about a day, where it was a mix of I agree with you, Metallica sucks, to fuck you, who the hell are you, I've never heard you, Metallica sold more records than you ever will, and Lou Reed is a legend, et cetera, et cetera. So I just want to say, use this podcast to say, it was a fucking joke. I was just joking.
And much like the Lou Reed Metallica collaboration, it was a joke.
It was a joke
that you made.
And I'm not selling my Metallica collection. And I do have a collection. You know, I'm a huge Metallica fan. I've got around 130 bootlegs of strictly Metallica, in either DVD, CD, or vinyl
format. How many Echo Brain records you got?
I have the Echo Brain record.
You so got I'm the Echo a huge, Brain records.
I have the Echo Brain record. I am a huge fan of everything Metallica has done since I was like 13 or 14 years old. I've followed them through everything, and this is a joke. I was joking, and I just thought, I really do think that the Lou Reed Metallica collaboration is weak, but as a fan, my fandom isn't unconditional, right? I have criticisms, as every fan of extreme fan of a band, we all like to huddle together and discuss our favorite bands. No matter how disappointed or how elated we are by their output, the best part about being a fan of anything is the discussion of it. That's why there's Star Trek conventions. That's why there's KISS conventions. That's why people get together and you talk on forums, or we do podcasts, or we tweet about our favorite bands. I'm not going to tweet about a band or an artist or a musician that I'm not a fan of because they're off my radar. I don't give a shit about them. This morning, I got a tweet from a guy in France, and he just said, fuck you. That was it. And I thought that was the
funniest. Did he spell fuck like P-H-O-Q-U-E, like the word seal in French? Fuck you.
No. But it was quite funny. I thought, wow, what a way to wake up in the morning. But I didn't retweet it because I thought people would think I was telling them to fuck off.
Pierre and Leon thinks you should fuck off.
But it's an interesting thing, doing this whole Twitter thing, and I really thought I found it quite amusing, all the hate tweets. Mm. But I also was aghast at just how many people don't get a joke, and how many people will eat up anything blindly. Like, they'll accept it blindly because they're supposed to, because they are officially a fan. And I thought the best part about being a fan is to just, you know, be so hypercritical. That's why you're a super fan, and that's what I consider myself in when it comes to that band. But I read this article that Chuck Klosterman posted about his critique about the record, which he really basically, I'm paraphrasing him, but he said that he was brought up to believe that record labels were inherently evil and they stifled creativity in a band. And now that the music industry has kind of dissipated, the labels don't have too much control, especially with an Uber band like Metallica, mm-hmm. who are left to their own devices. And he's kind of lamenting the fact that there isn't anyone with more of a chokehold around a band like Metallica, because this is what you end up with, like albums like Lulu, which I thought was a pretty observant point.
Bob Dylan was very popular. Everything was going great. Then that self-portrait record comes out at the height of his powers. It's weird. It's not as good.
There's some people who are good self-critics. There's some people who can really understand, who are more of an audience member as much as they are someone who has an audience. And there are people like that.
But it's hard to picture Lars Ulrich legitimately criticizing himself. Close your eyes. Try to think of it.
I don't know him, man. I don't know him. But I'm the first album that comes to mind when you mentioned the fact that this Dylan put out this album at the height of his career and when he went electric, et cetera, is Dice.
Right. The Dice Man.
Who I worship.
It's great.
Much. Basically, he's selling out Madison Square Garden. He's selling out arenas. He's the first comedian to ever do this. He's at a level of comedy that no one has ever really been able to match since.
Popularity-wise.
Maybe Russell Peters, you know, because he's
Dane Cook's it. Gotten
Dane
up
Cook,
there.
Maybe Russell Peters, yeah. But
he rarefied air.
Rare, really rare. He did it first, and he did it like over 20 years ago. And then the next record he puts out is a record with no laughter.
Yeah, but it rules. It's like his best record.
And it's the best record he ever put out called The Day the Laughter Died.
Double album,
double album.
There's also two other
Day the Laughter Died
discs.
Part 2.
Yeah.
And then he put out something a few years ago called Filth that my friend Jim Florentine hipped me to. And it's a 3-disc album that I think Dice quickly yanked off his website.
I need to hear that record.
It's basically, it picks up where Day the Laughter Died Part 1 and 2 left off. And
let's say trailed off.
Yeah, I really.
Those records trail off.
There's fighting with the audience. There's no laughter. There's uncomfortable silence, awkward silence, and this is at the height of his career.
And it was for Deaf. It was for American, or was it? It was for Deaf.
Well, Rick Rubin's label,
but
he produced
sort of
it. Yeah,
post Deaf Jam.
I don't know if it was Deaf Jam or Deaf American or Deaf America. I'm not sure, but it was linked to Rick Rubin. And you're talking about a guy who put this out at the height. Now, I think Dice is smart enough to know that what he was doing was genius. I don't really like to say too often that I was only joking because it makes me feel that I'm surrounded by idiots. You know, you don't want to break face when it comes to stuff like that. But in this case, you know, waking up in the morning with a fuck you, I just got to say, dude, are you that stupid? You don't want to ask it because you feel like you're on Earth too, but or the Twilight Zone. But it begs the question. Anyways,
there's many levels though of translation going on. This is a French guy, you know. Imagine he sees this translated in French. How often do you see a joke translated and go, "Oh, that's amazing"? You know, it doesn't really happen. So these guys are all over the world. They should have a sense of humor about it. Trust me, believe me, I know.
Do you get with your tweets, as you Twitter as well, there's a miscommunication there with some of your followers or some of your... When I say followers, the Twitter people...
Yeah,
who
I don't actually have a cult of people. You probably know that. And I don't actually have people following my career either. I have people on Twitter who are listening to things I say. Well, I've definitely converted my Twitter account into a repository for, like, wordplay, dumb jokes, and the occasional... Just whatever, you know.
What did you tweet today about a horse?
Oh, that was yesterday. I wrote I know a lady who married a horse. Their relationship is stable. And that was a huge hit.
You know who would love this is Adam, our drummer.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. I loved it. And people loved it. But I've had things that I push it too much sometimes.
You notice, I hope I'm conveying it properly that I'm not smiling.
you're half smiling.
But I'm sighing.
I once made a tweet where I wrote, "Shopping carts are really pushy," and I and I had a guy tweet me back, and he's like, "That is honestly the worst thing I've ever heard anybody say." And you know what? I think that guy still follows me.
Well, that's just it, isn't it? There's a few hate tweeters for the Metallica thing that are following us, which I don't get it, but. You know,
so I haven't gotten
fucking follow.
You know, the things that always there. Whenever Neil Hamburger maybe will tweet something involving me,
that's when weirdos sometimes will get one that sort of will say, and just try to goad me into something, but that's right. Not really.
And that's what it is, isn't it?
Yeah.
I was trying to do that to someone else this week as well. On Twitter. I was a bit busy on Twitter, yeah, and it didn't get picked up by anyone.
Kardashian.
Because she didn't respond to me.
Was it Kim Kardashian?
No. I was correcting Oprah's spelling.
Oh, yeah.
If you go on the Oprah Winfrey page, and I'm assuming that Oprah doesn't do this, like she has one of her minions do this, but whoever handles her Twitter account, it looks like it's her.
I think it's Tracy Morgan. Might be wrong. But.
I've seen his Oprah impression, which is spot on.
That was Star Jones.
But she tweeted something about her Indonesian followers, and she said, you are... She misused the you're, the you are.
Oh, that's bad.
Yeah, so I tweeted something to the effect of, you don't know the difference between you're and you are, neither does Oprah. And then I said, hey, Oprah, I don't know the difference between you're and you are either. Can I get a retweet? By the way, your show is fucking fun. And then someone said, you'd think that with all her millions... she could afford spell check. And I said, Oprah can afford spell check. She just looks at spell check in the face and gives spell check the finger. Just hoping for any kind of like response from her, but I didn't get it. She's got 7 million followers.
So you're trying to glom onto that.
Yeah, Oprah, so I do crowd. The same thing everyone's doing to me. So
you want an Oprah's Women Network.
I wanted.
Is that what it stands for?
I wanted all the soccer moms in the Midwest up my ass.
You should You should have a show called Love Danko Jones, and it's like kind of a combination of the movie Love Jones and Danko Jones.
Or not.
Or you could give love advice to the ladies. It would be like, the lady would call in and she'd say like, "Excuse me, I have a problem having orgasms." And then you could be like, well, just buy one of those sticks.
Why would she call with
food in
her mouth?
Buy one of those vibrating sticks.
Why would she call with food in her mouth, Nick?
That's just the connection she had. She had one of those weird connections.
Sounded like she had food in her mouth.
She has a speech impediment where she's forced to hold her hand in a circle around her mouth when talking.
Yeah, you shouldn't talk.
Don't make fun of me. I'm disabled.
I'm not a really good... I'm not a really good gift giver.
I'm terrible at gifts.
Horrible. But I like giving like $100. Like if you're going to give someone a McDonald's gift certificate as a goof, you give them a large amount of money. Like
$100 McDonald's gift certificate?
So the person who you give it to knows that you spent $100 on their present. But
it's a joke present.
It's a joke present. It's McDonald's gift certificates. Like, stuff like that. Or
I've been eating McDonald's lately. It's not good.
That's bad, dude.
It's after shows. There's a McDonald's nearby.
No, it's great. I'm not saying it's bad. It's bad tasting. I love it. Yeah. But it's not the healthiest
It's not a good choice.
Or I'm a big Three's Company fan.
Right.
And so Joyce DeWitt, I think it's joycedewitt.com. On her website, you can purchase for... I think it's $30, give or take $10, a personalized photo. So I wanted, happy birthday or, Merry Christmas, Joyce, or Merry Christmas, Jan or Steve, Joyce DeWitt. And the photos to choose from are 35-year-old photos of her. Not a Joyce DeWitt photo from today.
But that's better, isn't it?
It's amazing.
Everybody. Happy Diwali. This is Joyce DeWitt.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Those are the kinds of presents I like giving people. Mm-hmm. It's people like Emmanuel Lewis and Horseshack and Juan Epstein. Or
Dan Aykroyd.
Dan Aykroyd.
Actually, Dan Aykroyd is like a trillionaire from his liquor products, so he'd just be doing that for fun.
Yeah, yeah.
And from his relatively successful career.
I think he's had a really really successful movie career.
Yes,
but is this how we're going to end the podcast?
No, I was trying to ask you.
That's a really odd way to end the podcast. Dan Aykroyd's movie career.
What's your favorite Dan Aykroyd movie? Armed and Dangerous?
Spies Like Us.
Spies
See ya!
Not such a good one.
I don't give you spies like us.
Well, trading places. Good day.
Have fun.
Is that how we're gonna end it?
I don't know. I mean, all I can say is on your tour, you should watch a lot of Dan Aykroyd movies.
Yeah.
Including Nothing But Trouble.
And I'll start with The Great Outdoors.
Follow it with Dr. Detroit.
See you next week.
Bye.
Oh, fuck. Bye.